Hi, I'm Tess Vigeland. On this week's Marketplace Money, for the love of cars.
I see more cool cars per square inch in LA than anywhere I've ever been.
Dude, where's my car? Where's your car, dude?
Barris, my father loves this car more than life itself.
A man with priorities so far out of whack doesn't deserve such a fine automobile.
I've got 232 Fords.
I've got a 4 or 5 year old Porsche 911.
Ford Mustang RTR.
Both my wife and I have minivans.
Jetta clean diesel sport wagon.
I have an old Jag.
I drive my Excursion diesel.
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
We hit the road to talk money and cars from APM, American Public Media. From the Frank Stanton Studios, the parking lot of the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Tess Vigeland, and this is Marketplace Money from APM, American Public Media. Beep, 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 yeah. We are coming to you from my car this week as we take the show on location. Last June, we addressed jobs in Chicago. In the fall, we visited Philadelphia for a show about healthcare. For this remote broadcast about cars, the second most expensive purchase you will ever make aside from a house, me and my backseat drivers,
which you don't have to stay in the slow lane the whole time,
are on the long and winding road from Los Angeles to station KPCC in Pasadena. LA is a city on wheels. There are more registered cars here than people. So today we're going to look at the true cost of owning and driving a car. We are not talking about public transportation. We are not going to address going car-less. This is about you, your car, and all the money that goes into car ownership. Our first stop is just a short drive up the 110 freeway to the beginning of the Arroyo Parkway. It opened back in 1940. At the time, the Auto Club of Southern California hailed it as saving each driver 6 cents per trip over driving on surface streets from downtown to Pasadena. Now it carries more than 122,000 cars every day. And all right, here we are at Lacey Street Park. We're here to meet up with Dexter Ford, automotive writer for the New York Times based here in L.A., and Steve Mazur of the aforementioned Auto Club of Southern California. Hello, gentlemen.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
Thanks, Tess.
So let me start with you, Dexter. You've been writing about cars and Los Angeles for many years now. What is it about the Arroyo Parkway that kind of screams L.A. and L.A. drivers?
It's a wonderful, ancient parkway. It opened in 1940. And it was the first freeway, it was the first limited access highway in Los Angeles. So it was built with a 45 mile an hour speed limit and built for 1940 automobiles. It's a wonderful experience now. It's very twisty and turny, and it's kind of like a roller coaster ride, but you have to steer.
And is it symbolic of today's Los Angeles in any way?
It's the primordial freeway, and LA's one big freeway. So the whole culture of being in your car and your car being a real central part of your life kind of began on the Arroyo Seco Parkway.
Well, Steve, speaking of the car being a central part of our lives, it certainly takes up an enormous chunk of many budgets in this country. We brought you in because AAA does an annual survey of what our cars cost us. Tell us what you found this year.
The costs of operating a car seem to continue to go up, and we all see that these days with gas prices nearing new highs again. But in reality, the price of fuel is not the most expensive thing that we pay for with cars. It's the car itself. When you buy it, it costs a lot of money, and then as you use it, the value of that car goes down, and when you're done with it, it's worth almost nothing. So depreciation is the number one highest cost, but that's really fixed. When you buy the car, that's what it is.
Float some numbers over to us from this survey of what we in America are paying to own our cars these days.
If you drive the typical 15,000 miles per year, it's around 58 to 59 cents per mile when you consider insurance, registration, taxes, that depreciation, fuel, maintenance, and tires. And with gas going up, that's going up as we speak.
Yeah.
But the enjoyment and the use that we get out of them are worth it to us, because we need to be able to get where we're going, and the car is the most efficient way to do that, and that's just the cost of living.
Well, Dexter, let me pick up on that and ask you, as we stand here alongside the first freeway in Los Angeles, and this is a question that we're asking throughout the show today, why are we so willing to spend so much money on our cars?
Well, our cars are part of our personalities. They're part of kind of the brand of who we are. They're as much a part of you as your clothes or your shoes, and especially so in Los Angeles, where so many people spend so much time in their cars. It's a part of the culture, with the suburbs being spread out and needing to get different places. I mean, now the world is built so that you need a car to get around in it.
Do we place too much, not enough, just right importance on what our car says about us?
Well, I review cars for a living, so no. Rationally, sure. Look at all the people driving on the 405 freeway in beautiful BMWs and Mercedeses and Bentleys. A Toyota Camry is pretty much just as good a car for 99% of the things that they're going to do with it. And the people who have the crazy turbo Porsches and the wonderful Ferraris almost never go out onto country roads or go up in the mountains and actually drive them the way they were meant to be driven. And even if they did, a better driver in a worse car, in an average car, is going to go faster than a bad driver in a great car every time.
What are a couple of really big mistakes that we make when it comes to our cars and our finances?
Thinking that you have to have a new car all the time is a big mistake. You can easily beat the depreciation problem by buying a 10-year-old car. So there are ways around it. You have to reconcile the fact that you're going to be the person with the old-looking car.
Right.
You can't let fashion, you can't let your emotions drive the equation.
People often buy cars that have more than what they really need. Look around here, you're going to see four-wheel drive SUVs and pickups, a vehicle that has never seen snow or dirt. You need to right-size the car for the use.
All right, a couple of great lessons there, and we'll be repeating those as we go through this program today. Dexter Ford of the New York Times, thank you so much for joining us here along Highway 110, the Arroyo Parkway.
Thanks, Tess. Great to be here.
And Steve Mazur of AAA here in Southern California, thank you as well.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Marketplace Money is supported by Ally Bank, offering its Raise Your Rate CD as well as an online savings account and money market account. Learn more at allybank.com. By Reputation.com, with tools designed to help professionals and small business owners protect and improve their online reputations. Your online reputation is your reputation. And by LendingTree, providing up to 4 loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 1-800-555-8733. When banks compete, you win.
This is Marketplace Money from APM, American Public Media. Okay, back on the road, and time for a quick pit stop.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi, how are you?
Doing good. How can I help you?
I would like one hamburger, animal-style protein, and a vanilla milkshake.
And will you be eating this in the car today?
Yes, please. All right, now, come to think of it, while we're on a detour, let's swing by Santa Monica. My friend Phil Reed of Edmunds.com is out this way, and he is the perfect person to ask the perennial car question, what's better for your wallet, new or used? Yeah, going without a car is best, we know. But this show is for people who have them or want them. So let's pull into the lot here at Santa Monica Ford, the new car lot.
Hello, Tess.
We wanted to talk about the finances of buying a new car versus a used car. So let's start here with new. We've already talked about depreciation, and is that just one reason to never buy a new car?
Yes, it's probably the most significant reason, is that the 20% when it drives off the car lot, that's essentially what you save by buying a one-year-old used car.
Wow, that's a lot of money to save.
It is, and it's actually, if you wait one full year, you have 1 year's worth of depreciation and 1 year's worth of mileage, so it's like 30%. Not only that, but from there on in, that used car depreciates less than it did in that first year.
Well, then, I know this is going to be antithetical to your very being, but tell us why you would want to buy a new car.
In some cases...
Because aren't you buying a new car?
You got me. This is gotcha journalism. All right. Sometimes you want to be an early adopter, and I am buying a Nissan Leaf when it finally makes it over here from Japan. But the reason I'm buying new is because I want that car when it still has all of the government rebates and when it still has access to the carpool lanes. And I think that after a year or two, that may not be available.
All right. Any other reason why you would want to buy a new car?
If you can buy a new car that doesn't depreciate steeply, then you don't suffer that 20% or 30% in the first year. There have actually been several times, sometimes in recent past, where when the Mini first came out, you could buy one. 2 years later, you could almost sell it for the same amount that you bought it at. But it's a gamble, and not every car is like that.
One of the other things that you do get with a new car is some sort of service program.
Absolutely. Warranties factor in very strongly. People love the peace of mind of having a bumper-to-bumper warranty.
Yeah.
However, if you buy a 1 or 2 year old car and it has a 4 year warranty, the warranties are transferable. So really, maybe the sweet spot of used car shopping would be about 2 years to buy a 2 year old car, own it for 5 years, and then you would be owning it on a very flat point of the depreciation curve.
All right, well, shall we venture a little ways down the street to the used car lot?
Let's go see what hidden treasures are available.
All right, so here we are at the used car lot. You've already given us the case for buying a used car. What are the downsides?
Well, the downside is that you don't get current technology. And, of course, for most people, the downside is, I mean, there's all kinds of expressions like you're just buying somebody else's troubles. It makes me so mad when I hear that.
Why?
Well, it shows that people are not willing to accept a small risk in exchange for a big reward. And the big reward is the cost saving of it. So you save on the purchase price, the registration costs, the insurance cost. The only place you begin to start losing is on maintenance and possibly repairs.
Is there a difference? You know, so many of these car dealerships promote certified pre-owned.
Yes.
Is there a difference between buying that and buying just some car either off another lot or from a private person?
Certified pre-owned makes the whole car shopping experience much easier for the ordinary person. And that is because it certifies that it's in excellent condition. So you don't have to take the car off the lot to your mechanic, have them inspect it. And if they missed something, it's covered by an extended warranty. It basically takes used car shopping and turns it into a new car buying experience.
What about financing, though? I mean, isn't it true that you're going to get, say, a better APR buying a new car than you are a used car?
In most cases, yes. And that's been one of the negatives to buying used cars. However, that's beginning to change a little bit. But it doesn't offset the initial large savings that you get in the purchase price.
Phil Reed of Edmunds.com, thanks for meeting us out here on the lot.
My pleasure. Thanks.
And Phil's going to join us later in the show to talk about whether it's better to sell or trade in your car when you're done with it.
Can you pay attention to the road, please?
It's a red light. I am not going to run a red light.
Watch those pedestrians, please. Do not get in.
Hey, this is Brian Setzer. My first car was a 57 Chevy. Pink and white four-door. That was our gig car. We put the bass out the back window. That was in the back seat. And the guitars and the drums were in the trunk. And we'd squeeze in that pink 57 Chevy and take it to gigs.
Here I come in my 57. She's a real rider. Pink perfection.
As far as cool old cars, I've got 232 Fords, two hot rods. When you start restoring a car, forget it. It becomes a labor of love.
More on your car, including junkyard parts and honest mechanics, coming up on Marketplace Money from APM, American Public Media. This is Marketplace Money from APM, American Public Media. I'm Tess Vigeland. On the road for our special hour on your cars and your money. We're making our way north on the 110 freeway in Los Angeles for this remote broadcast from my car. On our way to station KPCC in Pasadena. It has been one long haul, but we are, let's say 3 miles into the trip? Almost halfway?
Lighting up Dodger Blue. Details at 93.
A few years back, when gas prices were spiking, like they are now, everyone was looking for a way to pimp their ride to better fuel efficiency. John Raby took a leap into a vat of vegetable oil. He hosts KPCC's off-ramp program. He bought a car that could run on oil scavenged from restaurants in his neighborhood. John says it was a great way to save money for a while.
It seemed too good to be true. An LA-based company called Lovecraft was taking sturdy old diesel Mercedes and for $900 converting them to run on vegetable oil. Lovecraft founder Brian Friedman explained it to me for my radio show in May of 2007.
The basic difference, vegetable oil is thicker and less combustible. So most engines won't start on vegetable oil. It doesn't have enough kick in it.
The Lovecraft system involved using the car's radiator fluid to heat the vegetable oil. Heating the oil thins it out enough so it'll combust. I bought a big 1980 Mercedes sedan from Lovecraft and started running it on vegetable oil. It ran great, and the oil was free. Here I am pumping oil from a 50-gallon drum behind a Mexican restaurant in my neighborhood.
It's a dark amber with little specks of stuff in it. 1 gallon's pouring in, 2 gallons, 3, 4, and 5.
I loved it, especially since I was sticking it to the man. Sticking it to my boss because work was reimbursing me for mileage. Sticking it to the state because the state wasn't collecting gas tax from me. And sticking it to the oil companies who'd hiked up the price of gas. I was so excited, I even took KPCC Morning Edition host Steve Julian for a ride on the highway, and he got jealous.
We're passing a Prius now.
We spend $400 a month in gasoline.
I'm really beside myself right now, Raby.
It was a passing fancy. The price of fuel fell back down, and scavenging for vegetable oil was a drudgery, so I went back to buying diesel at the pump. But my vegetable oil days came back to haunt me. My mechanic saw it happen. Doug McLeod has been running Precision Motors in L.A.'s Silver Lake neighborhood for 24 years, specializing in old Mercedes.
So I come into your shop. I'm all happy. I'm like, hey, Doug, I've got one of these cars that burns vegetable oil. I love it. I don't have to pay for gas. I'm so happy. What are you thinking?
Just a really bad idea. You'll be back in a few months with your car on a tow truck.
He was right. About a year ago, my car started losing power and eventually conked out, and I brought it to Doug on a flatbed tow truck. Remember Brian Friedman comparing vegetable oil to diesel fuel? He left out something important. Vegetable oil also contains cholesterol. Diesel doesn't, and neither does the product called biodiesel, which many people run in their diesel cars. As Doug put it, my car had come down with
atherosclerosis,
which means
the arteries are clogged. In this case, the fuel lines are clogged.
It never occurred to me that what could happen in humans could happen in cars. Doug says he had 24 other patients like me, and they'd all dealt with Lovecraft.
They just did the work and let the cars go. Of course, by the time they all came back, they had gone out of business.
Lovecraft shut down a year or so ago, and Friedman is nowhere to be found. But I'm not mad, mostly because I really love my car, which I'm now running on pure number 2 diesel fuel, with a dash of additive to break down any residual cholesterol in the tank. But I do miss the free fuel, especially now with diesel approaching $5 a gallon. And I miss the sweet smell of my exhaust in those days. You could tell when I was burning, say, vegetable oil, tortilla chips, or soybean oil, French fries, or my favorite, rice bran oil. Tempura. My car was an olfactory tour of the cuisines of the city I love. In Los Angeles, I'm John Raby for Marketplace Money.
Well, maybe John should have called up our next guest before his veggie experiment. Mike Quincy knows a whole lot about cars. He's an automotive specialist with Consumer Reports, one of the guys who gets to test drive cars for a living.
Traffic on the fives with Chuck Brooks.
Well, so much for this quiet morning we'd hoped for this morning. A signal in Encino, 101 eastbound.
We are now sitting in traffic, we thought he might have some secrets to getting through that awful process at the dealership.
I think the best thing that consumers can do is to find out exactly how much the dealer paid for the car. So in other words, when you see a newspaper advertisement or you hear a radio commercial of this really smooth come on, you know, come to the dealer and you're going to get below invoice. Well, they probably can sell it below invoice because the dealers are getting holdbacks and money back from the factory.
Hmm.
So that's kind of the cushion or the unknown amount that's more negotiating room. And that's actually where you start the bargain. You bargain from the dealer's cost up instead of the sticker price down. Their profit margin actually on a new car sale is very small. They make a lot more money on used car sales, finance and insurance, parts, service, and whatnot.
If you are in the market for a new car this year, Give me some of the best new cars out there and why.
Some of the cars that we like when you're on a budget include the Honda Fit and also the Hyundai Elantra, 29 miles per gallon overall.
Wow.
And the Elantra does it, you know, without a hybrid system, without a turbo, good reliability. It's a great car on a budget, you know, about $19,000 for a nicely equipped model.
Okay. Let's get to the bad news. What are your not-so-awesome picks?
Not-so-awesome.
Yeah. Stay away from this car.
We're going from the best of the brightest to the just the downright gnarly. The question that we get often is what's the worst car you tested? And that award, if you want to call it that, goes to the Jeep Wrangler.
Uh-oh.
Now, the Jeep Wrangler is cool. When you take it off-road, the Wrangler is unstoppable. But for you and me, we commute to work. That's where the Wrangler goes bad, because the Wrangler is noisy. It has a rough ride. It has sloppy handling. The brakes aren't so hot. The fuel economy is terrible. It's hard to get in and out of. As a day-to-day car, it requires its owners and drivers to make a lot of compromises.
So let me ask you, in this era of these high gas prices, what is the best way to save yourself a little bit of money on gas?
First thing, keep your tires at the right pressure. Second suggestion, open up your trunk and take out all the junk you don't need. Okay?
I don't have anything in my trunk. You know, I have no junk in my trunk.
You got to take
Wait
out,
a minute.
Take out the junk in your trunk.
I think one of the overall questions that we want to get at is, why are cars such a thing?
Wow. Cars are expressions of people's wealth. They're expressions of their own eccentricities. So why is the United States so car crazy? Because the cars are not an appliance. They're such an extension of yourself and your personality and what you stand for. And it could be a sports car because you like speed. It could be a hybrid because you want to be green. This country is all about cars, for better and for worse. Boy, being in L.A., this is car country. I see more cool cars per square inch in L.A. than anywhere I've ever been. I love cars, and I caught the bug, whatever it is.
All right. Mike Quincy of Consumer Reports, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me on.
Keynes and Hayek throw down, but first, let's do the numbers. Stocks pushed higher at the end of the day. The Dow Industrials finished up 72 points, about 0.5%.
All right, let's check the odometer. Well, we're about halfway to Pasadena in the car I purchased 5 years ago. I never considered leasing. I always thought it was a bad financial move, but that's not necessarily true, as our driving buddy Phil Reed of Edmunds.com explained. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Tess. Some people just absolutely love leasing, and other people think it's nothing more than a scam.
Yeah.
And it's neither. It's just another way to finance a car. What's really good about leasing is if you have a high priority, so in other words, what you want to spend your money on is cars, it's a good way to be in a new car every 2 to 3 years. It makes that transaction very easy. You move from car to car, and you become what we call a serial leaser. But if you do this through your adult life, you'll wind up paying more in your automotive budget than you would if you bought new or if you bought used.
And you're never going to own it. I mean, you're sinking money into something that you're never going to outright own.
That's true. You don't own the car. You're basically just paying for the depreciation on a monthly basis. However, there is a pretty good tax write-off for it if you use your car for business. So a lot of accountants will actually tell their clients, we want you to lease. And you do have the option to buy the car at the end of the lease if you fall in love with it and you really like it. But you shouldn't do that with the intention of buying, because you'll probably lose a little bit of money in the transaction.
Okay, so if you're going to lease, you just lease.
Yes. The whole concept of leasing is to maximize your cash flow. So all you do is you make a small down payment, smaller monthly payments, and you're driving a great car. One of the things about leasing they always say is you can drive more car for the money, because the really good cars hold their value well and the lease payment is lower.
What about how much money you should put down on a lease? I always find that terribly confusing.
You should really put down about $1,000, and those are just the startup fees. Because if you put down like a large one with the intention of reducing your monthly payment, first of all, it's all about cash flow anyways,
yep.
So you've just undone that. Secondly, if you wreck the car in the first couple of months, you may not ever recover that large down payment that you made, because it pays for the current market value of the car, but not that amount of money that you just paid to start up the lease. And some of them advertise very low lease payments, but if you look at the fine print, it's like, requires a $4,000 down payment. Who's got that kind of money sitting around to start a lease?
And we'll visit with Phil one more time later on to talk about the end of your relationship with your car.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Jennifer from Van Nuys, California.
Hi, Jennifer. Oh. How are you?
I'm good.
What's going on?
Well, I have a 2001 Volkswagen Beetle.
Marketplace Money is supported by IBM, working to help mid-sized businesses become the engines of a smarter planet. Learn more at ibm.com/engines. By Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at chevyvolt.com. And by Ally Bank, offering its Raise Your Rate CD, as well as an online savings account and money market account. Learn more at allybank.com.
This is Marketplace Money from APM, American Public Media. Well, as we're cruising down the freeway, I have to admit I do love my car. But only a select few love them enough to collect them or work on them day in and day out, or spend an hour a week talking about them on the radio.
Now, it's time for this week's CarCast with your host, Adam Carolla, and the professor, Sandy Ganz.
Adam Carolla has hosted all kinds of radio and TV shows throughout his Hollywood career. Loveline with Dr. Drew, The Man Show with Jimmy Kimmel. He turned up on Dancing with the Stars a couple of years ago. Now he hosts a hugely popular podcast, The Adam Carolla Show, and a companion call-in show called CarCast, where he takes almost as many money questions as we do.
There are things that are worth saving money for, and then there are things that are just a bust. And this happens with cars all the time. I mean, you could go down to...
Carolla is what they call a wrencher, an asphalt junkie who loves almost nothing better than working on cars. On CarCast, he and his sidekick Sandy Ganz review cars, talk about car parts and car repair, and counsel listeners through their car questions.
How you doing, Adam? How you doing, Sandy?
Good.
How's it going, guys?
So I just got into medical school for next year, and my parents said they'd contribute $5,000 towards the second car of my choice. I've got a...
We drove out to visit Carolla at his Glendale Studios, just up the 5 freeway from our studios. Partly because it's illegal to do an L.A.-themed show without a celebrity.
Hi. Sorry.
Hey.
I'm Adam.
Tess Vigland. Very nice to meet you.
Hi, Tess. How are you? Hi.
And partly because he's just funny.
Wherefore your interest in cars? Where did this come from?
Oh, that was like old English.
Well, public radio.
Yeah, you guys are smart over there. Except for the part where you can't figure out how to support yourself. Other than that, you're geniuses.
Touché. But all we geniuses would really have to do is auction off some of his cars as pledge drive premiums, and we'd be set. In the Carolla collection right now, 4 Lamborghinis, a Ferrari, an Aston Martin, a Jag, 4 Datsun Roadsters, and 2 of Paul Newman's old race cars, among others. Carolla says, only half-jokingly, that wrenching is one of those DNA anomalies. You either have the gene or you don't. And if you have it, then being asked a question about why we all spend so much money on cars is, well, very public radio.
Yeah, I will answer that in many tears, meaning you'll be crying. It'll be so goddamn boring by the time I'm done. Now,
please begin.
As long as we're talking finance and, you know, we'd like to help the listener along. First off, don't go out and buy a new car. You know, you've all heard, you know, you drive them off the lot, blah, blah, blah. But I'll take it to the next level, which is cars are made so well now, and they're all good for a couple hundred thousand miles. So who cares if some podiatrist put 18,000 miles on the thing?
Okay, that's one layer, and I'm not bored yet. Though we have heard this somewhere before, haven't we? So let's get to those other layers.
I'm going to ask you to get slightly philosophical for me.
Okay.
Most likely the second largest purchase you're ever going to make aside from your house. Why?
Yeah.
Why? Why? What's so special about the car?
I will say it's logical. You spend quite a bit of time in your car. You have countless hours a year in this environment. So why shouldn't it be as nice an environment as you can? And then secondly, how about as safe an environment as you can? Because your highest likelihood of buying it, and when I say buying it, I don't mean making a purchase. I'm talking about the farm, is behind the wheel of a car.
Excellent practical reasons to spend as much as you can on a car.
We won't get into his theories about cars as a superior investment. Well, maybe just a little.
You know, everyone's 401k is dropped through the basement, and everyone else's house is dropped through the basement, unless you live here in Southern California, in which case just drop through the subflooring, or you're on a slab. We don't have basements here, but metaphorically, you know what I'm saying. The cars have gone up. I can give you 20 cars that if you would have bought those cars a few years ago, you would have made a bunch of money.
Older, seriously expensive cars, but we take his point. Gans, the sidekick gearhead who answers the super technical questions on CarCast, isn't even as introspective as Corolla. Simple, he says.
It makes us happy. It makes us feel good. People spend money on, it's like, you know, compulsive eaters. They like to eat. They'll eat because it makes them feel good. Driving your fancy car, spending money, and, you know, all the car care products, all the stuff that you end up doing, it ends up being just part of the fun of having it.
And certainly part of the reason so many, many people want to talk about it. Not just on CarCast, but on, you know, other shows about cars. And as we left him to tape his show, he had an idea about that.
You know what? We need to break up those two Tappet brothers. I mean, they're fine, but I feel like they need to pair me up with either Click or Clack, and Sandy with either Clack or Click, and start a hybrid show.
We'll get the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe right on that. And if you're a serious gearhead, you'll probably want to head over to our website to hear Adam's roving reporter, Bill Mahoney. He's going to head out to a local junkyard to figure out how to get parts for a friend's car on the cheap.
I want to know, what are the best parts to get at a salvage? Should I get mechanical, body?
You can get either one, mechanical, body. Like for old cars, don't make no difference.
Like how old?
From 1975 down.
What's the best time to get there?
Early in the mornings.
I'm going to Wilmington. Any advice for Wilmington?
Nothing in Wilmington. I got three wrecking yards. But always before I go buy parts from wrecking yard, I call dealers or auto parts to find out the prices.
I hope you see that cop car. Well, I would like to eventually get there.
Lee Mayfield's Tell Me has been a favorite the last few months on KCRW. We were very pleased to present her at KCRW's Day Showcase at South by Southwest this year, and it's a pleasure to welcome
Hits, just keep on coming.
KHJ Los Angeles, it's the little old lady from Pasadena.
Hi, this is Dean Torrance of Janadine, the mayor of Surf City.
When my oldest was born 21 years ago, I had a Porsche 911 Turbo. And then when it was time for me to take the kid somewhere, you know, I had to put in a baby seat into the Porsche. Didn't really work very well.
Everybody's saying that there's nobody meaner than the
More on you and your car, which probably isn't a Porsche, coming up on Marketplace Money from APM, American Public Media. This is Marketplace Money from APM, American Public Media. I'm Tess Viglin, and we are still on the road in my car. No wonder people complain about LA driving. It takes forever to get anywhere, even when you're going 10 miles. And on top of it all, I'm out of gas. $71.28 for 15.843 gallons. Ay, ay, ay. I need to start walking to work. All right, back in the car. And as I mentioned, this one is a little over 5 years old, which means it's going to start having some issues. And that means I have to do something I absolutely dread. Get a good professional wrencher. And we actually found one. An honest-to-goodness, honest mechanic. Trust us, we asked around. So we headed over to her shop in North Hollywood with a car that was very much in need of some honesty.
It's an 86 Volvo 240, and when I got it, almost 11 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, it was $2,500 from a personal owner. It actually hasn't really given me too many problems.
Of course, this is our eternally optimistic producer, Stephen Hoffman, who sees a fly in his soup as extra protein. He's called more than once from the road to say he'll be late getting to the office.
We used to joke that we would just keep it until it died.
Mm-hmm.
And now that it's dying, we're like, oh no, what are we doing?
Exactly. You never want to let go of it. Let me put it on the rack and we'll check it out.
Okay.
And we'll tell you what we see.
Okay.
That's Karen Valenti, owner of North Hollywood Discount Auto Repair. 25 years fixing cars for LA drivers. You don't last that long without repeat customers who trust you. So while her mechanics conducted a 30-point inspection of Steven's car, we stood under the hydraulic lift and quizzed her about the best way for mere mortals to deal with their mechanics.
Are there really basic things that you should know when you take your car to the mechanic that'll make you not sound like an idiot?
The five basic fluids of the car will teach you enough about your car to know how it operates.
Okay.
Oil, transmission, brake fluid, power steering, and coolant. These are the things you need to know about your car, and those are the things will save you from disasters.
Why is it so hard to find an honest car mechanic?
Because it's work, okay? And nobody wants to put work into their car. If you have the basics understanding of your car, they're going to understand your level of understanding, and then they'll be able to match it. And yes, women will be taken advantage of when they show complete ignorance, and that's why mechanics don't even bother to talk. They don't explain it because they figure you don't know and don't understand.
But even with a little know-how, it's hard to escape that niggling feeling that just walking in the door of an auto body shop will set you back thousands of dollars in labor and therapy. You'd rather have a tooth pulled with no anesthetic. They start talking about the exhaust manifold or the differential, and you just nod your head. Valenti says there's no easy way to avoid getting scammed. It's all about relationships.
You find someone in your neighborhood that is owner-operated. The owner is on the premises. He's not out to lunch.
Or she.
Or she. He's watching and knowing what's going on in his business.
Back under the 1986 Volvo, some bad news for Steven.
When a car has as many oil leaks as this one does, it starts to hurt the rubber parts that are considered the suspension of the car.
Signs that it may be on its last legs. Steven mentioned to Valenti that another mechanic had recently suggested a new fuel pump. A couple of $100, and a day later, the car broke down again. And now it was the alternator.
And you know, I love my mechanic.
Good.
I've been going to him for years, and
good.
He's always been a straight shooter.
But he is.
You can have the most trusted source, but the moment that they tell you that you have something to fix, it's expensive, something goes back in your mind instinctually, and you think back on everything that's gone in the past, and you start to doubt what they're saying.
Exactly. And it's all because of your lack of knowledge, okay? Because you don't know that he can make mistakes, and there's no way I can tell when a part is going to stop working. I can't see into the future, and so many people want you to.
I have to tell you, my recent experience is that I had a 4-year warranty on a new car, and so everything was covered for those 4 years. And boy, what do you know? Right after that was up, suddenly I had a bunch of stuff wrong with my car.
Yeah.
Am I getting a story told to me?
No, it makes sense. But
it does.
Yeah.
But the timing is just so fishy.
People earn a salary to make the car last for that exact 4 years, and 4 years in one day,
huh.
It starts to break down. It really does. But it's normal for every car after its warranty to have the beginnings of the breakdown.
Of course, our poor Volvo passed its warranty a couple of decades ago. And now Valenti's found something called blow-by, oil leaking into the air filter, a devastating diagnosis.
It's time to move on in this car. It's just going to get worse and worse.
So the car's basically coming apart.
We'd have to rebuild the engine, okay?
Steven, you'll be taking my car back to the studio.
I think I should just go home now.
Age took its toll on this car, not neglect. But now Steven faces a universally tough decision. Pour money into the old car to keep it running, or give up.
You do need to fix old cars. And if you add up all the fixing that you do over a year, it's not going to be more than $1,500. So if you compare that to the car payment, which is going to be $3,000, you're sticking with the old car.
True.
Until there's something that is so expensive that it's more than the value of the car.
And we may have discovered that today.
Yes, we may have. Definitely.
The verdict? Steven will not be paying the $5,000 tab for a rebuilt engine. But being Steven, he's sure he can hold out just a little longer. And we're always there to give him a ride. At some point, Steven will have to say goodbye to his car. Most likely, it will head to the junkyard after 25-plus years of service. But most of us don't run our cars into the ground, even though, financially, that makes the most sense. No, we sell them, or we trade them in. And guess who's in the middle of that process right now? Phil Reed. So now to a Nissan dealership. And here's what he's trying to unload. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Tess. So it's a 2007 Honda Fit Sport. Has a manual transmission, which affects the price, too, and it's got 32,000 miles.
And we are here with?
Nazir.
Birya.
And you're an employee here at Nissan?
That's correct.
So when someone comes in with a car that they'd like to get valued, what's the first step for you?
There is three ways to give a price for the used car. There's auction value, there's a trade-in value, there's a private party, there is like Kelly Blue Book. That's the price usually I work with them, because does the bank want to go with it and all that? That's what I go the price for the customer.
Uh-huh. Okay. So then, Phil, what do you come to this equation with? What kind of information do you have?
Well, of course, you want to look up the values if you can beforehand so that you know whether the figure that you're getting from the dealership is good or not, because it varies wildly. For example, you know, my car is very good, fuel-efficient car. And in this time period of very high gas prices, that's going to drive the price up. So, you know, basically what I tell people to do is look up all of the information that you can, but also look to through classified ads to see what your car is selling for by other people in your area.
And then from the dealership perspective, what should people be expecting from you? Should they be expecting to haggle with you on the price of that car?
I have to say all the customers want to haggle. Everybody want to have a good price.
Right.
Some people go with the Kelly Blue Book. Some people go with the Black Book. Some people go with the MMR. This is auction value. There is like a three price. And I'm choosing from the three price, which way work better for the dealer. I give a price for the customer. When they're happy with it, I take a trade. When they're not happy, they can sell private party or they can go another place.
Then, Phil, what is the point of the trade-in value?
Well, the trade-in value is a reference point. I mean, not every dealership will have the same desires. Some people may already have three Honda Fits on their lot, so they don't want your car. Others might have sold one at a really high price yesterday, so they're mad to get more of them. So the bottom line is know as much as you can about the price and then shop around. And it's the simplest thing to do, because we have some really good options for disposing of your car now. You can put it on eBay. You can sell it through online classifieds. You can take it to your local dealership, like this Nissan dealership, and trade it in on a car or maybe even get a check for it. See which one is best for you.
Okay. So take us through the paperwork that you have here on your Honda Fit. First of all, you still have your sticker.
I still have my sticker.
Now, what does that do for you then?
It makes me feel good. It makes me feel secure. Actually, what it does is it establishes credibility for what is on the vehicle, like ABS, traction control, stability control, side impact airbags. You can't easily look at a car and tell if it has those things.
Does that make a difference to you?
Yes, absolutely. You have to know all the package to get the value for the car.
Okay, so you came in with your car and with your sticker.
Yes, I asked for an appraisal of my vehicle, mm-hmm. and they were nice enough to run their figures. And the auction value on this is $11,300, and the Kelley Blue Book trade-in value is $10,900. But he was telling me that he's really not prepared to give me that much for the vehicle. Is that correct?
That's correct. When I have a 300 of it in my lot, I'm not going to buy another one. When I don't have it and I have a customer for it, sometimes I pay what the customer wanted.
Would it make any difference to you if he were coming in here wanting to give you this car and take a Nissan in exchange for
it? I still give him the trade-in value.
The same value.
The same value.
What's the best way to make a decision, and how did you make a decision of whether to do a trade-in or a private sale? I mean, obviously there's a dollar difference, but it might also be easier to go to a dealer, isn't it?
The convenience factor is what drives trade-ins. However, I have to say that the trade-in is the Achilles heel for the consumer, because most consumers can't figure out what their price is. And as we heard, you know, it's a very complicated matrix of factors that they come into. And it's very easy for a car salesman to say, you know, it's not as worth as much as you thought it was. But if you've shopped around and let people know that you're shopping around, it begins to level the playing field, because now you're not talking to just one person and having to, you know, trust them whether that's true or not.
All right. Thanks, Phil.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, God. Jeez.
For LA, your jam factor for Los Angeles County remaining green. However, northbound on the 710, the SIG alert continues just past the 105, northbound on Hollywood Freeway.
Hi, this is Antonio Villaraigosa, mayor of the city of Los Angeles. As a little boy, 5, 6, 7 years old, I was saving money to buy a car. And that first car was a 1965 Chevy Malibu Super Sport.
My name is Sergeant Denise Jocelyn. I work for the California Highway Patrol. You know, there are certain things, tips, if I may, that are useful for drivers to keep in mind. Ask your passenger to use your GPS device in your car to pull up the map and read the directions out to you. Have your passenger answer your phone, respond to the text message. Our legislature actually sets the base fines. They start anywhere between $20 and $50 for the cell phone and texting fines. Those are just base fines. Once you add on the additional penalties, generally speaking, you're looking at approximately a minimum of $150.
What's up? I'm Vaughn Gittin Jr., the 2010 Formula Drift Champion, and I am a professional drifter. Essentially, we're driving cars sideways on a judged course. The thing about cars to me that keeps me so addicted, blowing tons of money on it, is the pure fun factor. You know, being behind the wheel of a car and expressing yourself and showing your personality through driving is addictive, and I love it, and it forces me to look at my bank statements every month and be really mad.
Marketplace Money is supported by Ally Bank, offering its Raise Your Rate CD as well as an online savings account and money market account. Learn more at allybank.com. And by Chevrolet, undertaking a carbon-reducing effort, investing in projects like wind farms and planting trees across America over the next few years. On the web at chevy.com. Marketplace Money's coverage of healthcare is supported in part by the California Endowment, a health foundation dedicated to expanding access to healthcare for all Californians.
This is Marketplace Money from APM American Public Media.
Really? You don't go all the way to the end? I always go. But I always go all the way to the end, and then I make a left. You really think this is quicker?
Trust me, I live here.
When I first started going out with him 2 years ago, we were a sleek couple.
KPCC's Madeline Brand is having some issues with her car.
People noticed us. Well, they definitely noticed him. There weren't a lot like him around then. He was fun, but practical. Self-reliant, but accommodating. Naughty, but nice. He told me things I wanted to hear. Madeline, he said, I get 34 miles to the gallon in the city, 44 on the highway. He showed me his EPA sticker to prove it. Wow. Not only was I going to look good with him, I was going to feel good, too. Jetta clean diesel sport wagon, you had me at Guten Tag. 2 years later, the first blush of our courtship over, I have some issues. Why does he pause when I want to accelerate really quickly? Why is his iPod function so clunky? Why do I find it hard to lean on his arm? Rest. But the big issue? I think he lied to me on our first date. Yeah, lied. That 34 miles to the gallon in the city? Well, here on the streets of Los Angeles, it's only 28.
Quarter tank at $26.09.
And ladies, you know how when you think your guy isn't being truthful, you talk it over with a friend? Well, I did that with Los Angeles Times car columnist Susan Carpenter.
It's supposed to average 34.
And I really get 28. I am mad at my car. It's lying to me.
Well, you know what? This is anecdotal, but according to my mechanic, when fuel prices go up, a lot of people think something's wrong with their car.
Susan said it might be my lead foot that's behind my lower-than-expected gas mileage, and I do like to zip around.
So many different factors that come into play in terms of your fuel economy. If you have a lead foot, if you're carrying even 100 extra pounds in your car, such as we're three of us, right?
Right.
So that's going to decrease your fuel economy already. I think it's 2% decrease in fuel economy for every 100 pounds you're carrying around.
Oh, great. Now he's saying I'm fat. But you know what? He's not the looker he once was either. When we first met, he said he was champagne-colored. But now I see, in the cold light of day, he's just silver.
When she's not having doubts about her car, Madeline is host of the Madeline Brand Show on KPCC. Speaking of which, here we are. Hi, I'm here to see the program director, Craig Curtis.
Hi, Craig. I have Tess Viglin here in the lobby to see you. Great, thanks.
Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Tess, you made it!
Hey, Craig, how's it going?
Great to
good to see you.
What took you so long? Didn't you leave an hour ago?
Well, yeah, but...
You're here to do the show?
You know, you have these brand new studios, but we kind of took care of things along the way, so how about we just close it out here? And that is Marketplace Money for this week from the studios of KPCC in Pasadena. Sort of. While we're stretching our legs, you can head over to marketplace.org/money for more great information about cars. We've got a checklist for buying a used car and tips for saving on car insurance. Be sure to friend us and me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at Radio Tess. We are back in the studio next week, not on the freeway. Marketplace Money is driven by Deborah Clark with Devin Robbins, Stephen Hoffman, and Sonata Lee Narsis. Our technical director is Josh Rogerson. Bye, Josh. We're going to miss you. Our theme was composed by Mark Governor. The executive producer of the program is J.J. Yore. I'm Tess Viglin. We'll see you next week.
There's a lot packed into an hour of Marketplace Money. Check it out again on our website at marketplace.org or take the show with you. Download the show by clicking on the subscribe to podcast link and never miss an episode again. Marketplace Money is supported by Putnam Investments, offering long-term investment strategies built on experience, discipline, and research. On the web at putnam.com/largecapequity. This is Putnam Today.
This is APM, American Public Media.